Hey everyone, thanks for having me. I have no disclosures. That's me. I really only put it up there because APHA said I had to. So I wanted to talk today about hospital usage among patients who just had a first trimester aspiration abortion. Why? Well, barriers to abortion care include geographic accessibility. One of the problems is that facilities are often concentrated in urban areas and they're not far out where people might still live, even though there's not a lot out there. And there are more primary care settings and community clinics in those areas. In addition, abortion services are often concentrated among physician providers and especially specialists like OBGYNs. So expanding the pool of qualified providers is really important as a possible strategy to increase that number. And of course, you can probably see where I'm going with this. We feel that expanding the pool of qualified providers doesn't need to mean only having more MDs. It could be in addition to physicians, qualified nurse practitioners, physician assistants, certified nurse midwives. And unfortunately, US states are increasingly requiring physician-only provision of abortion, and often local hospital admitting privileges for any physician that is providing abortions. That's kind of going in the wrong direction. If you look at this map, we have, this is just in the last, mostly in the last 5 years, states that now require or potentially have a law suspended while it's being litigated, laws that require physicians to have local admitting privileges at a hospital if they want to provide abortion. So the stated reason is to increase patient safety. So we don't have a surveillance system for abortion-related morbidity, although we do know from CDC surveillance that mortality from abortion is extremely low. But that's fair. Maybe to increase patient safety, we should look at morbidity too. We don't have national estimates on complication rates, but our best guesses, based on papers published in the last 20 years, is that abortion-related complication rates are between 1.3 to 4.4%, give or take a little. Unfortunately, I'm taking a quick diversion because there's news in the news. HB 2 was passed by the Texas legislature in the summer special session, and it took effect mostly on October 29th. The part that was really going to be critical for providers and determine whether they would shut down or not was that they couldn't operate if they didn't have admitting privileges by October 29th at local hospitals. In addition, the law covered other restrictions, and so Planned Parenthood sued to challenge parts of the law, including the one that was going to close clinics as of October 29th. So at the last minute, a U.S. district court did grant an injunction, so the law was not going to take effect. Then immediately the state appealed to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, in addition requesting an emergency stay, because well, we know you're not going to hear it until January, but we really want you to put the law back into effect tomorrow. So on the 31st, the emergency stay was granted, so the law did take effect immediately, and about a third of clinics in Texas can't operate and had to turn patients away who were scheduled. And the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals said Planned Parenthood failed to establish that the hospital admitting privileges requirement creates a substantial obstacle in the path of a woman seeking an abortion. And that's based on the undue burden standard that we've all been trying to meet in court cases since Planned Parenthood v. Casey in 1992. So the state, though, they didn't just argue that they weren't creating an undue burden for women seeking abortions. They, in fact, wanted to argue that they were really helping women, doing them a favor. As you can see, both state representatives, or rather state officials, and the Texas Alliance for Life made it really clear that this was under the guise of increasing patient safety and protecting women, and that's why the general public should agree with it. So going back to this map, how did that many states, seemingly all at the same time, end up like this? So the Americans United for Life group very conveniently provides lawmakers with templates that you just fill in the blanks for, such as the Abortion Providers Privileging Act. I can read this for you if it's too small. State laws mandating that abortion providers have hospital admitting privileges are critical to ensuring that women receive proper and competent abortion care. It goes on to talk about safety and other requirements you might want to add, like abortions in ambulatory surgical centers. So you fill in the blank, insert name of state or locations, and then you present the bill, and it's your bill. So this is actually happening everywhere in the country, and probably won't stop soon. So our questions and aims today: does early abortion care require access to tertiary facilities like hospitals? And do patients require hospital treatment, and how often after first trimester abortion? So we wanted to describe hospital usage during or after aspiration abortion in a multi-site, humongous California pilot project, and specifically the types and rates of complications, if any, that are associated with those hospital visits. Our data source, you've probably heard of it, the Health Workforce Pilot Project looked at the question of if nurse practitioners, nurse midwives, and physician assistants can be trained to competence to perform safe first trimester abortion care. And they can. This is the basic rundown of a big study. It's highly acceptable to patients. Patients are really satisfied with their care, regardless of which provider they had. And abortion-related incidents and complications were very low, whether it was an abortion provided by a nurse practitioner, nurse midwife, physician assistant, experienced physician, or newly trained resident physician. And the complication rates don't increase once the clinicians move to providing abortion without direct physician supervision. And so I wanted to sort of show you who our patients are. At this point, we have over 19,000 patients. We had 47 clinicians and 200-something MDs, and 6 partner organizations, 26 clinical facilities. And we didn't have a lot of restrictions for who could participate. As you can see, even among our 2 provider groups, there was very little difference in age, race, ethnicity, insurance type, or gestational age breakdown. So this is to say, what we were comparing, we compared 2 pretty similar groups. So for tracking complications, we follow up with patients for 4 weeks after their first trimester aspiration. Incidents are monitored with an extensive tracking protocol and a whole list of definitions and standardized methods for coding diagnoses, treatments, and outcomes, just to be sure that we have caught everything, because we didn't want to say that, oh, we know what the complication rate is, if we were missing even the smallest incident. And in the larger analysis to safety comparisons, we use multivariate regression to identify predictors of complications and system incidents, which were non-abortion related incidents. So, as of September 2013, so this is hot off the presses, we've had 19,167 procedures at 26 facilities, and the abortion related complication rate overall, minor incidents, major incidents, is 1.37%. And in total, among 19,000 procedures and 300-ish providers of 4 different clinical backgrounds and 26 facilities ranging from urban, hyper-urban to middle of nowhere, we had 9 people go to the hospital and need hospital treatment. In fact, it was more likely for a patient to go to the hospital who did not need hospital care than a patient that did actually need hospital care to be in our sample. You can see this here. I think I kind of read it out just now. But if we look at the total number of what we thought were incidents, it turns out that a lot of them were non-abortion related. And then abortion-related complications is at 262 to the right, bottom right. And that's out of the sample of 19,000 patients. And again, when we break those down, among the abortion-related complications, we had 9 that were major complications. We say anything that requires hospital-based treatment, hospitalization, transfusion, as a major complication, and everything else was a minor complication. Oh, I don't want. Sorry, guys. So if you're interested, we had 5 major complications among the newly trained clinicians. Those included a perforation, which was an immediate transfer to a hospital, an incomplete abortion, which was a delayed visit to a hospital, 3 infections, which were delayed visits to the hospital, and among the physician groups, there were 4 major incidents, and those were a hemorrhage, which was an immediate transport, that was 1, perforation, immediate, that was 2 of them, and a hematometra, which was a delayed complication, and so that was a later visit to the hospital, and that was 1. So what that means is, of the 9, only about half needed to go to the emergency room right away, which is the purported reason that it's really important for every physician providing every abortion to have hospital admitting privileges, just in case something was wrong. We had 5 people out of 20,000 people. If we have any limitations, it's that we had a follow-up rate of 70%, but the rates were non-differential between the 2 provider groups, and usually we've seen that if anything, there's a slight bias towards following up when you did have something to report. So we don't think that we missed things that way. Another possible limitation is we're really only looking at rates among a sample of women who had first trimester aspiration abortions. We're not saying anything particular about medication abortion or later abortion here. Nevertheless, this is about 90% of first trimester of abortions are in the first trimester, and I think we're still at like 60% of them are being done by aspiration. So it's still a lot of women, and it'll probably apply to the women of Texas or other places where an abortion is still an abortion. I want to thank my co-authors, Tracy Weitz, Angel James, Sheila Desai, and Diana Taylor. And that's it.